Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, part-time Brendan behind the glass. It is a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees. It is a going-away edition of The Killer Bees. It is the final show of the new year for the Killer Bees. And
the what? Old year.
Yeah, you're right, I guess. I guess it is the final show of the current year.
Yes.
Definitely not the final show of the new year. Yeah.
Let's hope not. Or we didn't get the memo.
Anyways, Blankers and the lovely Mrs. Blankers, we're having a conversation.
Yes.
A debate, let's call it, about the greatest female vocalist of all time. Blankers, why don't you set the scene for us and let the hive weigh in?
So, we all know, or at least a lot of people know, that this Mariah Carey movie, Whitney Houston movie is coming out, and we were all talking about it the other day in terms of the Super Bowl and her basically being known as having one of the, if not the greatest, one of the top two or three greatest national anthems of all time. And then it kind of spiraled into a conversation, you know, Lisa and I or have the news on, and then it goes into Entertainment Tonight, and they were previewing the movie, and she's just a massive Whitney Houston fan. So she was talking about how she always loved Whitney and how great she was, and I just kind of casually said, but don't you think that Mariah Carey had a better voice?
Ooh.
And she looked at me like I had offended like her entire family, and I said, well, I mean, it's a comparison, right? Like, I might be in the minority here, but I liked Mariah's songs a lot better than Whitney's. I said, okay, I get if you go like range, Mariah can hit that high note that very few, if anybody else, can hit. But Whitney, in terms of the voice, the quality of the voice and everything like that, and then it becomes personal preference on songs. But like, we were going back and forth, and she was not backing down on Whitney. And I'm like, look, I mean, I don't care for Mariah Carey, the diva, but I think that as a vocalist, it's a legit discussion, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I don't think it's like crazy. I've always been of the mind that Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston are top tier. Like, those are the two best female vocalists ever, okay. And like, they're in a tier by themselves. And then I think Mariah's probably second tier. So I agree with Mrs. Blankers. Now, I think it is very important to, you know, describe exactly, like, in terms of you like the songs better. Like, there's catchier songs than vocalists all the time. People come up with catchy songs that people love that are hits, that sell billboards, you know, records, blah, 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 and they can't sing a lick. We all know that. So if you're talking strictly vocals, I put Aretha Franklin and Whitney Houston in a list above them, like, themselves.
And Aretha's, you know, more old school, but, you know, in terms of the more modern day, I would think that those two are top of the list. And I think that, like, you can go with voice quality, because I don't think there's any dispute. Mariah's got a strong voice. I think she's got a beautiful voice. But I think that Whitney's tones and everything like that, I totally get it. Like, the story goes that at the Super Bowl, they wanted her to lip sync it. And she's like, I'm not lip syncing it. I'm doing it live. And then it turns out to be the greatest anthem of all time that, you know, she's obviously in a league of her own in a lot of ways, as you said. But I think Mariah's right there. And so I didn't really realize it till after we kept going back and forth that I was like, this is actually legit. Like, I'm in the minority. Like, not a lot of people give Mariah the credit that I do in terms of the way she sings.
Yeah, I think Mariah's good. I just don't think she's in that league. Like, it's not a knock on Mariah. Just because you're praising somebody else that's not Mariah doesn't mean that you dislike Mariah. But I like when you share these debates that you have with Mrs. Blankers, especially when Mrs. Blankers right. I wish you would do this more often. Maybe you can do this in the new year a little bit more.
Well, that's no problem, because it happens daily, and she's always right in her mind. So
same.
That keeps us keeps it interesting. Yeah, we just keep going back and forth. So yeah, we'll see.
Hold on. Important question. Yes. Jeremy said same.
Yeah.
Jeremy, did you mean same, you're always right in your mind, or same, your wife is always right
in
her mind?
No, same situation as Blankers.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
This is, I think these are the 3 hours of the day where, like, Blankers and I can be 50-50 right, and, like, these are the 3 hours that we cherish, the only time that we can possibly be right.
I just would also believe that you're always right in your own mind. So I
no, I don't believe that. I admit when I'm wrong all the time. Now, in the current moment, current moment, yeah, I think I am right with thoughts that I have. But I, whenever I'm wrong, I'm willing to admit it. R. Berry tweeting in saying that Blankers just ended up on the list. It is Thursday. It is Bad Take Boulevard. Did Blankers just make the list?
I mean, it's
bad take.
See, you know what? And look, because there's a lot of people on Twitch that are giving their suggestions. I'm saying of like the past, like, because I think Mariah Carey is way past now, and RIP to Whitney. But I also think that, to me, Adele knocks them all out of the park. Adele's voice is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So I would say of current day right now going forward, Adele is at the top of the list
Celine
for me.
Celine Dion ain't bad. Celine Dion
But she's
ain't
retired.
Bad. Did she retire? Yeah, she's not doing the Vegas
no,
thing
she's
anymore?
No, and she's got a medical thing going on right now where
terrible.
She's had to step away. Yeah, so she's gone through a lot. And by the way, the other thing that I didn't realize, because again, as this debate kind of spurred on between Lisa and I and we were going back and forth, and I said, well, really, we could be having a different discussion if Whitney didn't ever meet Bobby, because Bobby kind of brought her down and ruined her career. And Lisa goes, oh, no, 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 no. A little known fact, but Whitney was already kind of a wild child and did her thing. And Bobby just was someone to do it with. But it wasn't like Bobby turned Whitney the wrong direction. Whitney, behind the scenes, was already dabbling and doing things. And I was like, I had no idea. I was like, and 5 minutes later, I came back. I go, are you sure? And she goes, oh, yeah. I go, I had no idea. I thought Whitney was this, like, you know, church-going, holier-than-thou, clean as a whistle, and then found out that she was a party child, I guess.
Huh. Fame's not good for people. It's really not. Fame is bad for people. What's the best way to segue from Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston to Michael Brantley? 713-780-ESPN. I need a little bit of help. 713-780-3776. What you got?
I mean, a lot of people find things about their family members or people that they're close to or really like, and it turns out to be false, and it creates like a separation. You don't have a separation with Michael Brantley. He's in the family to stay in the family, to be a loved member of the family.
Okay, there we go. I like it. Anyways, Michael Brantley, they made it officially yesterday, which is good because we've seen these physicals the last couple of days that sometimes these reported agreed-upon deals can sometimes not happen. See San Francisco, see Carlos Correa. The details of the contract is out, Blankers, and we knew that he was getting a $12 million base. Now, he has $4 million of incentives, which we knew that as well, but we now know the details of the incentives, and I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. It's if he reaches 525 plate appearances next season, he gets the full $16 million. He gets the full $4 million of incentives. He gets $500,000 each for 400 and 425 plate appearances, and then he gets $750K each for 450, 475, 500, 525. You know, a lot of details there. We can get lost sometimes. The devil's in the details. The point is $4 million potentially in incentives, and it's all based on plate appearances. So, like, the Astros getting some insurance here. If Brantley can play, then Brantley can play. Now, there's two angles to look at it. One, this is something for like a different ball club where, you know, it could become a potential issue where if Brantley's struggling, he's not getting his at-bats, a manager's looking more for the team than the player, and all of a sudden you have a dude who's not playing, he's not chasing these plate appearances, he's not chasing these incentives. But I think this is a good thing from a Houston Astro perspective, and it shows you how the Astros are like, they operate differently than other teams, and it's not a worry to me with Brantley and the Astros like it could be for a young man, like a young manager, a different manager, and a young player. Brantley's a professional. Like, Brantley's going to understand if he's on the bench if he's not playing, and I think he's going to be okay being on the bench and not chasing these incentives. Secondly, you have Dusty Baker, who knows these incentives for his players better than the players know their own incentives, and he allows players to go out there and chase these incentives. So for some teams, this could be an issue. Like, this could be an underlying thing that could pop up late in the season and cause some, you know, controversy, distraction. Michael Brantley ain't that guy, and Dusty Baker's the type of manager that helps his players chase the incentives.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the interview with Berman that he did, but he really summed up everything you just said, because they said, you know, Bagwell has come out and said that he'd like to see Yordan in left field at least 50% of the time, and, you know, laid it all out like we had heard this offseason even before they signed Brantley. And Brantley said, I'm a team player. Whatever they need me to do is what I'm going to do.
That was more about defense, though.
Well, I think that in a nutshell, it was a synopsis of who Michael Brantley is. Like you said, he's a true professional, and he knows that he wanted to be here, and he knows that he likes them and they like him. And that's why I think that, short of having like a Yuli Gurriel falling off the planet regular season, they're not going to screw him. We hear all these stories and see all these stories about when guys get close to these incentive bonuses, that a lot of times depending on the team and the people involved, they will intentionally sit them out or keep them from getting to those said bonuses. Maybe it's direction from ownership. I don't think we're ever going to get in a situation with Michael Brantley where they're going to try and nickel and dime him out of the other $4 million if he can get it, because he's been valuable to them. They've been valuable to him. And I think that this is just it's a match made for this next season. I don't know if it goes further than that, but for this next season, I think there's a pretty good understanding of, from both sides, that there's no animosity and there's not going to be that kind of pettiness, I don't think.
I don't think it's going to be an issue, even if Brantley's not allowed to chase it, or if Brantley gets shut down a couple of times, he's on the IL a couple of times. Because, look, Brantley, I mean, let's be honest, Brantley's had injury concerns even prior to 2022. Because if you look at the last time that Michael Brantley had 500 plate appearances, I mean, he had 508 in 2021. But didn't have, he had 277 in 2022. He had 170 in the COVID year. So, like, I think it's going to be something that could potentially, it won't be a problem. But in terms of getting to 525 plate appearances to get the full incentive, I don't know if he gets there, if I'm being quite honest. But I don't think it's going to matter. And the Astros have the luxury because they have a pro in Michael Brantley and they have a manager, a player manager, who's going to be in the looking out for the best interest of the player. But the other angle to look at this too, Blankers, is what's your confidence level in Brantley's health? Look, he's in his mid-30s, coming off major shoulder surgery. The Astros, even if it's only the base $12 million, they've committed heavily to Michael Brantley. What is your confidence level in Brantley's health? And what other thing that the Brantley signing shows about the organization from a holistic point of view? 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. You can send all your bad takes to @Pat. Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Eric Edholm's going to join us at 1 o'clock, talk some NFL draft. We have to. We're in Houston with the Texans. Also, Bad Take Boulevard coming up at 2. Very special Bad Take Boulevard. They always are. Also, BZ Money. We're going to do BZ Money at 12:45 today. Last chance for you to win some monies with the BZ, with the Killer Bees in BZ Money. We have given out a winner every single week. So if you're telling us you're losing money, but if you can pick the games that we're picking, we've been able, if you can cherry pick, we've been able to win a game every single week. It's a record that's historic. It really is, and we look to continue it coming up at 12:45. How confident are you, Blankers, in Michael Brantley's health? Because let's face it, he's going to be 36 years old. He's coming off a major shoulder surgery. He's not been a model of good health really his entire career. You know, when he was in his mid-20s in Cleveland, he was playing almost every game. But ever since, you know, 2016, last few years in Cleveland, first few years in Houston, and really every year in Houston, he's had some injuries. He's been injury prone. He's had some time where he's had to miss because of poor health. What is your confidence of Michael Brantley's health come opening day?
Opening day, I'm not so sure, but I don't have to be, right? I think that the beauty of being on this team as opposed to other teams, especially when you sign a contract even to that magnitude, the expectations are high and it starts from day one. But as we all know with this team, with the talent on this team and the fact that they have bigger fish to fry and what they're trying to do, they're not going to rush him back too quick. They're not going to have to force him into the lineup so that ownership and fans get their money's worth to see him. I mean, when he was talking about when he's not even going to start swinging a bat or getting into baseball type activities, I think till January and February. So I don't think that there should be an expectation that you're going to see him on opening day. It could be a luxury. It could be a bonus. But I think the main thing is that in the heat of the summer, and then as you get going into the main real important stages of the season, that's when you need Michael Brantley. So I'm a little leery of the injury, as I think we both were, even before we considered, because we said, look, that's a long time to wait. We were hearing March before he'd know what the shoulder was like. If you had to wait till March, well, the rest of the market's going to be a desert. It's so dried up. And then what do you do?
Yeah, I'm not really worried about Brantley on opening day. I think Brantley's going to be ready to go on opening day. You mentioned that he said yesterday when he was meeting the media with some Zoom, I guess, in a bougie hotel, he said that he's going to start swinging the bat in mid-January. Yep. If you start swinging the bat in mid-January, you can DH opening day on March 30th.
Sure.
I think that he's going to be fine by opening day. My concern is the 162, and we've talked about this several times in relation to Michael Brantley, that, look, you're a team that expects to be a playoff team. You expect to win the American League West. You're going to be one of the favorites to win the World Series. In fact, the Astros and the Mets, I saw one book yesterday, they are the co-favorites to win the World Series. So the Astros have the luxury that a lot of other baseball teams do not, where they can look at the big picture. They can look at the 162 with the pretty confidently saying that we're going to be a playoff team. So if you know that in the back of your mind, and Dusty Baker's been managing this way for the last few years outside of the COVID year where he's looked at the 162, he's had his eye focused on the postseason. You can do the same thing with Brantley. Like, I know that you have the incentives that we were talking about that gets him paid if he reaches certain plate appearances, but the Astros have to be selective on how they use him because the goal is to get Brantley fresh and make sure that he's healthy by the postseason. So I'm not really concerned about opening day, but I'm totally fine if Michael Brantley only plays 120 games.
Absolutely. And he plays the most important 120, right? And he's in good health going into the playoffs. It's going to be so important because that's when you play your most important baseball. That's when you need your best lineup on the field. That's what we've seen of Michael Brantley in the past. That's what we didn't see last year when he could have made a difference. Not saying in the results wouldn't have been any differently, but you might have even been in a more position, better position of strength had you had him. But I think that's the key, Jeremy, to what you were saying, is the fact that there's a good open communication and dialogue that's ongoing between Brantley and the Astros. And I think that he understands, as well as the Astros understand, to the point I was making earlier, that if he's not 100% healthy, he's not going to force himself into the lineup because he's worried about getting that bonus. He's going to do the right thing for him and his health and the team, just like the team is going to do the right thing for him. If he's not ready, they're not going to say, we need you. We're paying all this money. You got to get out there. And I think that there's a mutual understanding. And I think that's the beauty of the relationship, which would be a lot different and have dynamics maybe change things if you were talking about a different market, a different team, and a different situation.
Yeah, the player matters so much with this type of deal, especially with this situation. I think a lot of other players, I think a majority of the other players, they'd be like, you know what? I'm not going to tell them my shoulder's not 100% today, and I'm going to chase some plate appearances because I know that there's money on the line. I don't think Brantley's going to do that. I think that's the benefit of having a professional. Now, the injury is obviously the biggest question. Where are you at, Hive, on Brantley's injury history, the concerns? How confident are you in his health? 713-780-3776. That is the biggest question. That is the looming question. Now, I do think that there is one downside to Michael Brantley being back with the Houston Astros. And look, I'm in favor of Brantley overall. This isn't me saying the Astros shouldn't have signed Michael Brantley for insert player X. I love that Brantley's back. But I do have a fear about it. I do think that there is one downside about it, and it's that a quote that you just mentioned or in the previous segment, Blankers. Here's what Michael Brantley said yesterday when asked the question, look, are you okay DHing a lot of the time for the Astros?
Of course. I'm a team player. Team comes first always. I just look forward to contributing in a positive way each and every day, any chance that I get. So if that's what they want to do, I'm all for it. If he needs a day and I can go out there and left field, I'll be ready to do that as well. I think we do a great job of communicating how everybody's doing and giving everybody, or trying to keep everybody fresh in the process. So whatever they need me to do.
So Michael Brantley, the great pro, like he's a veteran, he's a professional, he's a team player. That's all great. And the downside isn't about Michael Brantley, but Brantley just mentioned in that bite there. If Jordan needs a day, I'm willing to go out there in left field. The biggest downside of Michael Brantley being the left fielder DH that you brought in, and Jeff Bagwell has alluded to this, and Dusty Baker has alluded to this, both of them have basically said Jordan Alvarez, a majority of the games is going to be your left fielder. And quite frankly, I hate it. I'm not going to move off of this hill and this stance. The most important piece for the Houston Astros offensively is Jordan Alvarez. Jordan Alvarez is the best offensive player on this team. He is the most important offensive player on this team. We saw the damage he did last year throughout the regular season. We saw the damage that he did in the postseason. Making sure that you have Jordan Alvarez the entire year and the postseason offensively is the most important thing the Houston Astros should be doing in the regular season 2023. I know some people, you got to put him out there. Stop babying him, blah, 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 blah. Are you going to have that same reaction when he goes crashing into a left field wall and breaks his leg? Like,
right.
You have to make sure that your most important offensive piece is ready when it matters most.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, I think it's a give and take situation across the board, because we've talked about how hyper important Yordan is, and we've talked about the one guy you can't afford to be without. Now, I talked about being without Michael Brantley. It sucks, but as long as you have Yordan and Tucker and healthy Bregman and the guys that you have in the middle of that lineup, you'll be okay. But if you take that big bat, that big bopper, and we already know just by taking the small sample size of this last playoff run from the Seattle series to the World Series and going, without that dude, that bat, and what he did, it's a different situation. So you can play without Michael Brantley and win. You don't want to see what it's like to try and do the same without a Yordan Alvarez, but that's why I think it's a give and take. While early in the season, Brantley is making sure he is 100% or as close as he can get to it, then Yordan can be in left field. And I don't think it's going to hurt anybody or make it any... You just, obviously, you're going to be a little bit more holding of your breath if he goes barreling into the corner or into the alley, or there's a possible collision, mm-hmm. which we've seen in the past, even with Peña and him, and you worry about those two guys going down. But I think in the overall, it's because you have such a deep, talented team that you have these interchangeable pieces. At some point, you know that Abreu's going to sit down for a while, or maybe he can DH too. You don't have to play each guy every day. It's a beauty because no matter who you have in the lineup, chances are it's a pretty good bat.
Yeah, but I don't want Yordan playing much defensively, and that's what the biggest fear that I have of this, and the biggest downside of this is because Yordan, like, if you want to play Yordan in left field 50 games, okay. But I think Yordan Alvarez is going to play at least 100 games in
left field
if he doesn't get hurt, and that terrifies me.
You and I.
It's the same reason that a franchise quarterback needs a great offensive line, right? Why do you need a great offensive line? Because you're protecting the biggest investment you have offensively. Yordan Alvarez is the franchise quarterback of the Houston Astros lineup. He is the most important piece that you need to protect. Mm-hmm. And you're not protecting him if you're playing him 100 games in left field.
But you and I are on the same page on that. You and I are on the same page. But Jeff Bagwell's not. And Jeff Bagwell, when he comes out and says, I want 50, not 50 games, like you said, he wants 50% of the time. Now, I think that's pushing it too. I don't want to see that. I understand that things change priority-wise when you're in the playoffs. And you want that bat in the lineup, and you know that, you know.
He's your best left fielder. Yeah,
right.
Postseason, all that goes out the window.
Exactly. But for the regular season, I'm with you. I don't need to see 50% of the games. That's why I'm saying maybe early on, while Uncle Mike is getting healthy, he plays a little bit more in left field. When Uncle Mike is 100%, unless he's slumping mightily at the plate and struggling, against righties or whatever the case may be, against lefties, then maybe you have to, again, alter your plan. But other than that, Uncle Mike in left field is just fine, and Yordan is healthier just DHing. I know he wants to be out there too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to keep the player from himself. You have to make sure he doesn't do something because he wants to be out there that puts the whole team's chances to succeed at risk because he's trying to do too much.
Remember the collision with Peña last year. Remember
that's
the
what I'm
double
saying, yeah.
knee surgery in 2020. Like, you got to protect the investment. What is this team without Yordan Alvarez?
Protect the investment. It's a team that's a wild card, probably struggling to get in.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, our HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Is there a downside to Michael Brantley being that platoon left field DH with Yordan Alvarez? Also, the other part of the Brantley signing that I want to get to, that I don't think we've looked at this approach yet. A lot of people had a lot of things to say about this organization and its dysfunction. How the Michael Brantley signing proves that that's all a myth. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
One thing that I think the Michael Brantley signing kind of debunks a lot of stuff. You remember, Blankers, when the Astros fired James Click? First general manager since, a dude back with the Yankees in, the 30s or 40s. They got belligerently drunk and was, punching dudes and, quit his job. That this is the first time a Major League Baseball team has immediately fired its general manager after winning the World Series. You can give me on the technicality. They didn't fire him. They just didn't pick up his con. They fired James Click. They didn't want James Click back with the Houston Astros. And you had his old baseball, writers, buddies backing up James Click. Used to work at Baseball Prospectus, was kind of like one of their own. He was passing. He was like Keith Law. He wasn't a reporter, but he was writing about baseball and sabermetrics and analytics and all of those things. So they all came to his defense when Jim Crane fired James Click. Well, Keith Law, we had him on, and he called the Astros a circus. He called them a clown show, called it a cluster. You know what? I look at the Michael Brantley signing as like the cherry on top of how that take is completely wrong. The only person that really hadn't come back is James Click. Sure, Verlander left. He got a huge contract. But every single coach on last year's team is back. Mm-hmm. Does every single coach on last year's team that is part of a, you know, circus, a clown show, a cluster, a dumpster fire, do they come back? Does Michael Brantley, who is a professional that could go play pretty much wherever he wants, wouldn't he leave if this was a cluster, if this was a circus? Would one of the best free agent first base targets, I think the best, I think he was our favorite target collectively as a show at first base, would he sign with the Houston Astros and talking about winning? This dispels. And look, I don't think any of us really took Keith Law seriously when he said that, or the national media seriously whenever they were calling the Astros dysfunctional, Jerry Jones, a circus, and all of that. But you've returned every single coach. You got the top first base free agent. Michael Brantley, who's a pro's pro, comes back and talks about how loyal he is to the franchise, how great this franchise is, and how he loves this team. We can dispel that notion once and for all.
Yeah, look, I think this is first of all, the minute he said it, we both looked at each other with raised eyebrows like, what the hell did he just say? And I get it that it's his buddy. I get it they used to work together. I get it he's a staunch supporter of James Click. You can be a supporter of James Click without having to go and take those kind of shots at the organization that you might be upset with the owner because he didn't bring back your guy. Because the bottom line is, like you said and so much more, we've seen where there's been dysfunctional relationships in locker rooms. We go back to the Billy Martin, Reggie Jackson days and go all the way to the current days. And we know that there are plenty of times and plenty of coaches where it just isn't the right fit and it doesn't work out. I go to last year when a veteran, very highly respected manager like Joe Girardi is in the middle of a Phillies locker room with some young guys and some more modern day players like Bryce Harper and others. And it just didn't work. And they were basically, you know, muddling in and around mediocrity. And the minute that they get rid of him, that's when you start hearing from the Bryce Harpers about how there's a new approach and there's a new feeling and there's a better locker room. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, it shows on the field and this team gets all the way to the World Series. So there's been a lot of other situations that are dysfunctional. When you look at the Astros situation, I don't think no matter what anybody like a Keith Law says, anybody in baseball, no matter how much they wanted to nitpick at the different things with the Astros, starting with the cheating scandal, no one looked at it and said it was dysfunctional. You had Dusty Baker at the helm. Dusty Baker, as much as we will push back and not agree with all of his decisions, Dusty Baker is in total control of his locker room. And he has those conversations with his players. And we know he's quirky. And we know that sometimes, you know, the conversations happen in the batting cage. And sometimes they happen in his locker room. But they happen. And then you look at it and go up and down the list. You lose one of the best pitching coaches in baseball in Brent Strom. But then the law firm comes in. No pitchers are complaining. Same thing with Cintron. And the guys that are working with Snitker and the guys working with the hitters, Bregman, who's a massive over video watcher and, you know, a student of everything with his swing in the game, they all rave about the guys that they have and they rave about each other. And everything you hear is the culture of that locker room. So I think it was way out of bounds and completely off base for Keith Law to say something like this, because I think for the rest of the baseball world and the true baseballers that around the sport every day.
Yeah.
They know that they're almost jealous of that kind of peaceful calm that they have within the locker room and on the field, that there's just an understanding and an aura of kind of like not greatness per se, but confidence that they'll work it out amongst themselves.
If I can like defend Keith Law's point though, which I don't want to make a habit of doing that, mm-hmm. is that he was talking about from the point they hired James Click. Like it wasn't everything in the past. It wasn't pre-offseason 2023. He said at that moment it's a circus. It's a clown show. They're operating like a dumpster fire. So from that point, which look, I think that could have been the start of dysfunction, but everything else would have had to unravel. You're not signing the best free agent first baseman right. in baseball. You're not retained. Like if there would have been a mass exodus, right? Like the coaching staff, who were free agents, they didn't have contracts, most of them. If it was such a cluster, dumpster fire, circus, clown show, there would have been a mass exodus of those dudes. Like, the coaches would have left this offseason. They didn't. Every single one of them is back. Michael Brantley, he would have went to play somewhere else. He wouldn't have taken probably a little bit less money, incentive laden, to be back and then say, the reason that I stayed is because I love this organization. I love this franchise. Jim Crane's a great owner. We've been very honest with each other from the very start. Like, the people that are in it, like, they're in the trenches, the players, the coaches, all of those people, even Justin Verlander, even though he left, Jim Crane. Like, you, everybody that's in it, that's in the circle, it speaks glowingly about the organization. It's people that are friends with James Click that call it a circus.
Sure, the
and everything that's happened since the firing dispels all of that.
The best barometer are the guys that leave. Because if the guys that leave,
right,
they on the way out, they got nothing to lose. They can spray their bullets. They can drop all of the real inside knowledge. They can take their shots, and then they can go on their merry way. But the guys that have left have said how much they love their time. Even a Trey Mancini, who's unsigned, kept talking and raving all over and over again about every bit of the organization, the players, the coaches, management, how they embraced him from day one. Vasquez, the same thing. Loved the environment. Just wanted to play every day. Can't be mad at him for that. And you tip your cap and thank him for being here. But on the way out, he could have said, man, this place is crazy. I came here to be a starter. They wouldn't even let me do that. And they did this and they did that. But he talked about communication. He talked about how he was treated. He talked about how he loved the locker room. I think that's all you need to know about the fact that it's in good hands right now. It may be in different hands, and it may be a little bit more old school than what people are used to in terms of the way management is set up currently. We don't know if that's going to change by the time spring training starts or the season starts or not with a true general manager. But at least you know in the moves they made and what we've seen subsequently, they're in a good place, and they've got the right people to keep doing the same kind of job.
This might be a weird comparison, because what you said kind of made my mind go there about the players that have left. I think that is like a good testament to what's going on. Because if you're employed by the team and they're signing your checks, you're probably not going to say bad things. Now, when you're a free agent, you're probably leaving. There probably would have been a mass exodus. But if you go back to the players that left the Texans last year, it was the opposite of that. Charles Zeminihue that was, you know, ragging on the Texans every chance that he had. Randall Cobb, who's like another pro's pro, even whenever he had the press conference in Green Bay, like, he said it in a kind way, but he was throwing shade at the Houston Texans.
Zach Cunningham.
A Fortune 500 company. Yeah, Zach Cunningham. The list goes on and on.
Roby. Yep, Roby too.
Yeah, so, I mean, the list goes on and on last year with the Texans and dudes that were getting cut midseason. They're like, man, that's an organization I'm glad to leave. Like, I'm happy that I'm gone. I'm glad that I'm getting opportunities elsewhere. Whereas the Houston Astros, where there's supposed to be this dysfunction, players are leaving, be like, oh, I'm so appreciative of my time there. I loved my time there. The time there was great. Now, this opportunity presented itself, and I felt like I had to leave. For Christian Vasquez's point of view, he got big money, and the Astros weren't going to make him a starter over Martin Maldonado, and Christian Vasquez's priorities were that he wanted to play. I believe if the Astros made it the priority to say to Christian Vasquez, you'll be our starter, I think he would have been back. Justin Verlander, his money, the reason he left was money motivated. I firmly believe if the Houston Astros gave him the same contract, he'd still be a Houston Astro. So there was not a mass exodus. Every member of the coaching staff is back. Brantley's back, speaking to the loyalty. We can dispel, and again, I don't think people in Houston really believe that. This was, I think, more nationally driven. I think it was from baseball writers nationally that were, you know, in cahoots, friendly with James Click. They felt that James Click got done wrong, which I can understand that logic. But the notion that the Astros were a circus and a clown show was outrageous then, and all of the proof that has happened since then, it can just throw fire on that bad, bad take.
Well, and I think the other thing, Jeremy, is a lot of times to the public, to the outside world, there's the misconception that it's just Bagwell and Reggie Jackson and Enos Cabell running things.
Right.
And I think that what you don't realize internally is, and a lot of times it happens with a lot of the analytical guys, they don't want to be in the public spotlight. They're happy being in complete anonymity, no one really not knowing their name or what they do, but just loving what they do. And I've lived through this when it comes to Daryl Morey and the Rockets. He had multiple guys that were doing a ton of the work that made that team's front office work so seamlessly and so well-oiled machine-ish with the way that they could combine numbers and eye tests and analytics and trends and all the different things they needed to do. Now, one, like Monty McNair, was the guy that had aspirations of Sunday being a general manager, and now he is in Sacramento. Eli Wittes, who is still with the team and barely anyone out there knows, is exactly like Monty, but he's totally an introvert. He doesn't like the public. He loves just crunching the numbers and doing the behind-the-scenes stuff, and that's what makes them still so good in their front office at analytics, is because it takes an army, not just the guys that are on the front lines that with the cameras and the microphones. And I think they still have a lot of the right people in place at Minute Maid Park to do the same kind of things they were doing with Click. It's just you have different decision makers pulling the trigger on what you're going to eventually do.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Last week, BZ Money didn't go great. That's because I wasn't around. Well, I am back. I'm here to save the day. Every single week of BZ Money, the Killer Bees have picked a winner. We haven't won money, but we picked at least one winner every single week. That streak continues next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 is your home for Texas A&M Athletics. Catch all the football and basketball action right here as the Aggies make their way through the SEC. Only on ESPN 97.5. Giga Mags.
I make money move.
Do these guys have any idea what they're doing? Probably not. But that won't stop them from making picks. This is BZ Money.
All right. We've picked winners each and every week of BZ Money. Although we've lost money. We've lost some of Mr. Gow's money. We've made it. He gave us $1,000 start of the year. We've lost less than $300. That's good news. We have $715 remaining. Now, Blankers, we're going to be off next week.
Yes.
And then, so we're looking at week 18 of the NFL season.
Yes.
Like, we're going to have week 18. We're going to have the playoffs. So, maybe we start bumping up the bets. Maybe we start slinging around the money
about
a little bit.
And, you know, as a good partner, I have to let you know.
Yeah, y'all did poorly last week.
Well, but your boy was very, very confident. And
why is he my boy?
Cole. Cole wanted to bury you.
And I'm just wondering why he's my boy.
Well, because you knew him previously, and you know, you act like you guys are buddies, and if I get a chance, I'm always going to associate you with the guy in your chair. He came in, and he basically was crap-talking and wanted to bury Branham. I mean, and he kept saying, the same way he did with Who Said It, he's like, I'm burying Branham. I'm going right at him, and that's why I want to go big, and I want to do this, and I want to do that. And we were kind of like with the way I did with Who Said It. Yeah. I'm like, look, on decisions, if you want to bury Branham, I'm putting this all on you. And he did really well on Who Said It. He didn't do so well on BZ Money.
Yeah, you come at the king, you best not miss. Blankers, you want to lead us off? What game are you trying to sell us here?
Overconfidence is unbelievable. Look, the first one to me that seems, I think, pretty realistic is the fact that I know New England's coming off a debacle at loss with the Raiders, but Cincinnati at New England, to me, is a no-brainer. They still have Matt Patricia calling plays in New England. It seems like a complete bleep show. You know, you've got Mac Jones, of all people, screaming and yelling and bitching about the offense week after week and just not being able to figure things out. And you got one of the quietest but hottest teams in the league right now in Cincinnati. And they could be the Cinderella kind of sexy pick to make another run towards the Super Bowl. They're red hot. Burrow's playing great. The offense looks like they can put up points. Everybody else is doing their job. New England at home getting three. To me, I'm like, that's not enough. I think Cincinnati wins this game by more than a field goal. I like the Bengals.
Only thing that holds me back here is I have a pretty general rule to never bet against Bill Belichick, no matter what else is going on around him. And the Patriots are 7-5-1 against the spread this year, so they have a winning record against the spread. Whenever I looked at it, first blush, I thought that was a small number.
Yep.
New England better at home, though. I could be talked into it. It's not a hard no. It's more of a lean no. Brendan, where are you at?
Okay, Jeremy. Well, I guess this is going to be a complicated one because I'm in a similar spot to you. Cincinnati is rolling. The thing that I struggle with a little bit, they do have the win over Kansas City, but aside from that, most of this stretch has been against bad football teams. I just Bill Belichick sometimes, even in down years, can surprise you with a good defensive game at home. The weather, I'm sure, is going to be atrocious.
He likes to take what you do best away from you. Is that the passing game? Are you going to make him run the football? I'm just curious.
In brutal weather, yeah, I think so. I'm in a lean yes. And so for that reason, we have a lean no, a lean yes, and a strong yes. I think we go with it on this one, but I think we keep it cheap.
What's cheap?
Well, we were just talking about how he wants to spend a little bit more.
20?
I was thinking 2025.
Yeah, I was thinking 2025 as well.
Okay.
Let's go 25. Like, if we're going to say we're going to spend a little bit more, money, we can't be soft. And, I mean, 25
is
not
25.
A big deal anyways. Okay. All right, so $25. We're putting a quarter on the Bengals -3 in New England. Don't feel great about it, but, hey, it's what we do. All right, first game that I want to sell to you guys, it's our Detroit Lions. It's our favorite team on this show. At least Brendan and I's favorite team on the. Actually, that's not true. Detroit at Carolina. This is only a 2.5 yep. point spread. Detroit's only giving 2.5. Now, it is a road game, but this is kind of similar to the game you just sold, Blankers, where you have a team that hasn't been playing all that well, Carolina, although they've been playing a little bit better since they fired Matt Rhule. And then on the other side, the Lions have been rolling. The Lions have been doing great. Now, when you guys want to play Detroit, it's not turned out well. Brendan's awful picking Detroit against the spread. Blankers has been okay. I have not, I don't think, picked the Lions against the number at all. Well, it changes this week. Detroit's going to roll into Carolina. They're going to blow out the Panthers as they continue their quest for a playoff.
I like it, Jeremy, simply because one team's playing for everything and the other one's playing for nothing. They're just trying to play for a draft pick. And I think that Detroit needs every win right now, and they know how important the last three of the regular season are. Carolina, though, you're right, they've played better. They really have nothing to play for. They're just trying to get guys to play for their jobs as they figure out who is going to be their next coach and how they're going to go about their next season. I think that Detroit should win this game. I know Detroit's not as good offensively or defensively on the road. But I think that in this case, there's too much on the line for Detroit, and the home team is getting 2.5 points. I think the Lions could win this game by a field goal or more. I like the Lions as well.
So it sounds like we're going to bet this either way. I'm just going to do my part and tell you guys what I see. I would prefer to stay away from this game if it was totally up to me.
That's because you're a Lions fan.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's part of it. Because the Lions offense at home, I think, is one of the five best in the league. The Lions offense on the road might be below average. Jared Goff has thrown 3 touchdowns on the road all season. That being said, I still feel pretty good about this game because the defense has gone from one of the worst in the league to secretly above average. And I think above average is enough against these Carolina Panthers. I definitely expect the Lions to win. And because the line is under a field goal, I am not going to fight you guys. I'm just giving you guys the information that I have. I do expect the Lions to win this game.
All right, Jared.
$45.
$45.
And honestly, I don't even have a problem with it.
Okay.
If I came in screaming, go Lions, go Lions, go Lions, we might throw 100 at this, and that I'm not comfortable with.
Yeah, see, that's what you prevented.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I honestly think that this one's, and again, you always worry about a line that looks fishy like this, but I think that if that was 3, 3.5, I might have a little bit more reservation. I'm with you. I go 45.
I don't mind this bet. I don't. Right. I don't have a problem with it.
Brendan, what you got?
A very rare opportunity, something we've never gotten to do, I don't believe, on this segment. I'm going to pitch the Thursday night game.
Oh, yeah, we've never done that.
The Jacksonville Jaguars, pretty hot, heading into New York.
Jacksonville is so hot right now.
They are, and they're playing well. I got to tell you, New York only 2-point favorites. I think they're going to win by more than that.
I don't love the short week. I don't love Jacksonville going on the road. I think these are two similar teams, like similar teams in opposite ways.
The defense is so much better.
You can't love Zach Wilson. I mean, that's got to be like the biggest fear of anybody when looking at this game. Is Zach Wilson still a quarterback for the Jets?
Sure.
I don't believe in the Jets offense, but I do believe in the Jets defense ability to give the Jags some trouble.
Who are you picking?
The Jets.
Oh, I thought you were picking the Jags.
No, I did too. I really did. I thought you were taking the Jags.
The Jags are hot. The Jets are the better football team.
Man, that you sold that on the fifth.
Branham, I don't know where you're going on this because I was buying in on the Jags angle on this.
I don't
like Zach Wilson.
Well, you jumped in before I was finishing. I said Jets only 2-point favorites, and then you jumped in.
I don't like this game. I don't like Jacksonville having to go all the way to the Northeast. I don't like that it's a short week. I don't like that. I think that they're two very even teams, honestly. Like, if you play on a neutral field, I think it's a 50-50 game.
What about the Jets
are playing at home.
The weather's going to be key because I think the bad weather's coming in, but I don't know if it's going to be in the Northeast yet.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think it is a little early for the Northeast. I don't know if it is that bad.
I don't think it's that big of a trip, by the way, Jeremy, from Florida to New York.
What do you mean? It's from the south all the way to the north.
Yeah.
So we're sending this one out?
I don't want to play it. It's up to Blankers.
Yeah, I'll pass.
All right, Blankers, what's your second sell?
My second sell is another team going in the right direction and another team going in the wrong direction. Indianapolis at home blew a 33-point lead last week on Saturday for Saturday, and it was embarrassing. And I know that they want to play better, but playing better means you benched Matt Ryan in favor of Nick Foles. I won't say his nickname. The Chargers, on the other hand, boy, I mean, the throw that Herbert made to save the game last week, the way he played the week before, and just basically just pinpoint, just dissecting a defense over and over again. I like the way the Chargers are playing right now. I think Indianapolis just took the final kick in the grapes and said, our season's over, and even if we want to play for Saturday, I don't think that they're going to win.
They're playing on Monday.
Huh?
They're playing Monday.
Well, maybe that helps. I think that any day that ends in a Y is not going to end in a Colts win. So Indianapolis getting 4.5 at home against a red-hot Chargers team, I'll take the Chargers.
The thing that this was a game that I had highlighted, too, that I bet individually. I like the Chargers side of this, too. The only hesitation that I have is going huge because the Chargers have a reputation under Brandon Staley to play down to their competition. So I love the play. I just don't want to bet like a hundo on it.
I'm fine with that. Brandon? I'm fine with that, but I definitely like the Chargers.
I don't know how you bounce back from what Indianapolis did last week. I don't see it. I like the bet. I'm cool with like a 50.
Yeah, let's go 50. Are they cool with the blinkers?
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, let's go $50 on the football Chargers. All right, second game that I want to sell to you, and this is more of an emotional hedge. Cleveland is all of a sudden winning football games. Cleveland winning football games equals bad for the Houston Texans. Because I have Houston sports battered fan syndrome, I'm betting Cleveland -2.5 at home against New Orleans. One, Cleveland's been playing better football. Two, Cleveland's in the hunt of the AFC playoffs if they can win down the stretch here. And also, like I mentioned, it's an emotional hedge. I think the Browns cover the 2.5. If they lose, great, because it means good things for the Texans. If they win, well, I just bet them, and I'm going to win some Mr. Gow's money back.
Brendan, I don't know what you're thinking
here. I like the pitch. It's not really a Browns pick. It's a hedge, and I like the hedge.
Yeah, I do understand that part of it because I keep going back to, would you have taken the number 12 pick in the draft a week and a half ago as opposed to where they are now? The Browns scare me now from Texans fans' perspective because I think the Browns are going to win a couple more games. I think this is a very winnable game for
Cleveland.
They're
the more talented team, for sure.
I think so.
They're the more talented
team. And at home.
And they're home, and they got more to play for because they have a chance to make the playoffs. I understand New Orleans' division is up for grabs, but they don't have any hands on the football to grab at it. I think they're done.
I think we bet this. The question is how much.
Yep.
How much do we emotionally hedge, Jeremy?
I don't want it to be more than the Chargers. How about 45?
Okay. God, you guys are going really bigger than I thought.
We only have a few weeks left.
God, don't be soft. It's not our money.
Oh, okay. Well, then fine. Don't be soft. Why don't we go 50?
Well, I don't want it to be more than the Chargers.
Oh, well, then, okay. Even it out. Fine.
It was rational, not softness. All right, but what's your last one, Brendan?
All right, the Green Bay Packers at the Miami Dolphins. How about those Dolphins, hey?
Shut up.
They had a pretty good win last week. At home, only 4 points. I don't even have trouble. This was the game that stood out to me the most. I get Aaron Rodgers. You feel like he's going to have things going right at the end of the season.
Wait, the Dolphins had a pretty good win last week. Didn't they lose to the Bills?
They did. They played the Bills down the wire, okay?
Oh, boy.
No, you're
right.
They
had a great loss a week
ago. Great loss. As good of a loss as you can have.
They had that game down to the wire. I was thinking they won, but you're right. I was off there.
Anytime there's a Packer involved, I trust in blankers, so I recuse myself from the conversation.
Oh, I was going to do the same thing because
we have to bet this one. You guys haven't.
You
want to
bet Miami?
Yes, I do. Four points.
How do you feel about it? How do you feel about this from a Packers perspective, blankers? Give us
You know me though. I'm always pessimistic. I don't like this. I don't. If this game was in Lambeau, I'd feel a lot better about it. Miami at home, coming off a tough loss to the Bills,
spread's way too low.
They've got a lot that they want to prove to show that there still could be contenders. I know the Packers need the win, but the Packers basically have two straight wins against teams that aren't very good teams, the Rams and the Bears. I don't like this game at all. And I 4 points to me, I could easily see Miami winning by a touchdown or more, but I don't like it.
Can we make
Sounds
it a
like
cheap
Miami
bet?
Then. Yeah, let's go 20. Let's make it the cheapest bet of the day.
Okay, I'll take it. It's the first time you guys have let me bet a game in like a month.
We'll be better at
now,
it.
Now, this is my hedge
bet. We're good at it. We'll
make
all of them.
If Miami does win and they covered, then I feel great that we won money. But if the Packers win, then it keeps the train rolling down the track to keep our playoff hopes alive.
All right. Those are our bets with BZ Money. If you can selectively pick the winners, we hand winners out each and every week on BZ Money. Eric Edom, lead draft writer for NFL.com. He's going to join us to talk a little bit of NFL draft. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.